Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evening, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community. I am Debbie Brooks, founder of HWC, speaking with our co-host Grant Bentley, Australian homeopath and specialist in the facial analysis method. Today is October 31, 2011. The people over here in the U.S. are celebrating Halloween, but maybe not so much because it's pouring rain. And I understand that there is the Melbourne Cup, a big historic horse race that's happening. So there's a public holiday across the ocean there. And we're going to be talking with Grant today as a follow-up from our previous shows when we learned about clinical outcomes and using the facial analysis to determine the miasm. We're going to continue to talk about that same issue, I think, and the pathologies that we see and treat. And he's going to continue on with the discussion that we've been having so far. So you can go back to the archives, listen and catch up, put the widget onto your website, let other people know by clicking Twitter or sharing on Facebook. There are a lot of ways that you can get this message out to many, many people. So a hearty welcome to Grant Bentley, the founder of the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, Homeopathic Facial Analysis, which is HFA Research in Melbourne, Australia. Oh, wait a minute. I have to give him some sound. For some reason, it did not click on. So hopefully he will be on with us. And for some
okay.
reason...
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Okay, great.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. It's nice to speak to you again.
Wonderful. So you're going to give us a journey into the facial analysis. Last time I remember we talked about polycrasts and a little bit about the miasms, and whatever questions people have, put them up onto the live chat and we will take a notice of them and answer as best we can.
Sure. I'm happy to take any questions that anyone would like to ask. Where would you like to follow on from now? Where would you like me to begin?
Well, you maybe we need to give just a little intro to new listeners to explain that this is kind of a method of practicing homeopathy that you have developed over the course of a couple of decades that you have found is based on clinical data and exact measurements of the features of faces, and this is kind of proven over the course of time for you to get excellent results.
Yeah, well, essentially just recapping the basics, what ended up happening was, as I was saying in the first conversation that we spoke about that, it was really trying to implement what Hahnemann was talking about with these chronic diseases, and that is that the miasm should form the basis of every chronic disease prescription. The trouble with coming up with the miasm as the base for a chronic disease prescription is that it's terribly difficult to find. I mean, you can't do it just by the similimum only, otherwise chronic diseases wouldn't have needed to be written. I mean, Hahnemann had already invented the Semillimum quite some time ago, and we know that he had fantastic success with it. We know that he had great success with the epidemics of his time, whether it be for scarlet fever or war typhus or cholera. It didn't really make any difference. Hahnemann, through the whole understanding of the genus Epidemicus, which is a story in its own, I guess. But I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that Hahnemann said, look, give me the major signs and symptoms of each disease, and I can come up with a cure for it. And he was pretty much right. The only thing that he couldn't do was that he found that he wasn't able to do anything except give some momentary or some palliative relief when it came to chronic disease. We hopefully can remember in some of our homeopathic history how Hahnemann would quote cases like a person with severe pneumonia or bronchitis, a lung complaint, and what would happen is that he would be able to give the Semillimum, and that would hold for a little while, but then the weather would change again, and then down would come the same case of bronchitis. And this is where he began understanding that when we're dealing with chronic disease, there seems to be some impediment to fixing up the complaint as quickly and as efficiently as what we can with acute disease. When he was dealing with scarlet fever very early on in the piece, he learned quite quickly that to give as a not only a curative but as a homeoprophylaxis, something like Belladonna, for example, he could give it to the whole family. And therefore, he was getting very quick results. We understand because hopefully we can remember that with war typhus, he gave, I think it was 182 cases of which only one died, even though I think it is, the name escapes me a little bit now, Magic of the Minimum Dose. I think it's Shepherd. I think in one of her books, she quotes about how war typhus right up until the advent of antibiotics had a 60% mortality rate, when yet Hahnemann only lost one, and that was an older guy in his 80s or something. So he saw very, very early on in the development of homeopathy what it could do in acute diseases. And what would throw him, of course, is that he treats something like asthma, bronchitis, migraines, whatever it is, something that had a chronic or relapsing, continuous hold on that person, and while he was able to give some momentary relief, he wasn't able to stop its reoccurrence. And that's what led him down the whole pathway of writing chronic diseases. People like Herring, for example, have often written that what does it matter if we follow Hahnemann's theory on the chronic diseases, providing we get the Semillimum? Well, that's missing the whole point. And I think that sometimes homeopaths today still follow that Herring-like procedure. That is, we don't have to focus on the miasms. It's all terribly complicated. I don't really get it. So all I'm going to do is just focus on getting the Semillimum. But Hahnemann had already moved on from Semillimum only very early on in his homeopathic career. So to adopt the principle of let's just go by the Semillimum, the totality of the symptoms, and not worry about the miasms is going almost back to, well, not almost, it is going back to pre-chronic diseases homeopathy. So what I decided to do was to really understand what the miasm actually is. And in turn, I've come up with an idea in my own mind, which is kind of half Hahnemannian, but with some new developments. So I'm not sort of one of these homeopaths that are just saying that almost in a religious way that whatever Hahnemann writes has got to be adhered to. I think what Hahnemann writes has to be treated with respect. We have to understand that he is the founder. No one knows the system better than what he does. But at the same time, Hahnemann was not divine. He was a human being. And so in my own mind, I've made a couple of modifications in that. But essentially, it's Hahnemannian. And the development of this HFA.
Can I interrupt you for just one moment?
Of course.
Just for the sake of the listeners, in terms of what a miasm is, and perhaps some people might think that if you speak of a miasm, that you might have to be giving a nosode, but that is not actually correct, that the miasmic homeopathic remedy could be any plant, mineral, or animal that you have developed what category it goes into. Just to explain that there are many selections of the miasmic remedy.
Yes. When we're talking about anti-miasmatic remedies, I think, look, it was some practitioners like Swan, for example, who started doing a lot of nosodes. And we seem to have this idea, it's developed, that we have a remedy for our chronic disease based on the similimum, but then we have to include this other remedy.
I just lost you.
You there? Hello?
Are you back?
I am back. I decided to ring in again. I don't know how we got lost.
Because it says, attention all hosts on Blog Talk Radio. The power went out. It seems, I think up north, they're having winter storms. And also, it says, we wish you a safe and happy Halloween, which I don't know whether it's a joke, trick or treat, or it's the real thing. But we lost.
So there's a ghost in the machine.
We lost you temporarily just to make it more exciting, and so we now have to. So everyone, happy Halloween! And so you were saying that Swan, who started doing the nosode, seemed to have this idea that you have to have a remedy for chronic disease based on, and that was the end of what I heard.
Okay, well, first of all, Halloween is a really important day for me, because Halloween doesn't mean anything to me as far as pumpkins or ghosts or anything, but my youngest daughter's birthday is on Halloween, and she's sweet 16 today. So, yes. So anyway, back to where we are. Yes, Swan developed mainly the nosodes, your Metarhinum, Cipollinum, and so on. What we have, though, is that we seem to have invested into the nosodes these special properties that other remedies don't have. If you look at Hahnemann's chronic diseases, the theoretical part, then what you see is that Hahnemann never tried to potentize up leprosy, for example, or he didn't do the Cipollinum. He was talking about that the anti-miasmatic for syphilis was mercury and thuja was the specific for psychosis and so on. So Hahnemann saw that the well-selected remedy that is chosen not only on the symptom totality, but one that in the makeup of the remedy itself, its energy, included the energy of the underlying miasm and became the anti-miasmatic. I think that it's a confusion in modern-day homeopathy that what we do is we give the indicated remedy, and then what we do is we either finish the case or we start the case, or we open up a confused case with the anti-miasmatic as if somehow that's got different properties. That is a complete confusion and misunderstanding. Even Kent says in his lesser writings, look, this whole idea of the anti-miasmatics being used as something different is means that these homeopaths aren't getting this concept. And that kind of shows that we're not getting it either. The idea of, well, look, the remedies that I'm choosing aren't working very well. Perhaps we need a miasmatic, as if it's some different, belongs to some different race or planet or whatever it may belong to, but it's a completely different sort of remedy, is to miss the point entirely. The anti-miasmatic remedy is the remedy that you choose based on the presenting signs and symptoms that also has an action that mimics the action of the miasm that the patient has, meaning that if a patient has the way of defending themselves by throwing things out to the surface, meaning that when they are under stress or that they are suffering from an infection, they are more likely to have allergies and skin complaints and wear their emotions on their sleeve and so on, meaning that everything is being pushed outwards of the body to protect internal vital organs, then that outward motion needs to also be the central part of the remedy that we choose. So we need to have the signs and symptoms right, and that remedy has to be strong in outward motion. And that's where we find remedies like sulfur, because of its centrifugal action, becomes the prince of the antisorics and the major antisoric as far as Hahnemann was concerned. Same with Thuja when it comes to the psychotics. It is because Thuja has this, as does Metarhinum, as does Sepia, as does Roustox, they all have this underlying resonance, this energy, this force or motion that contains and imprisons any stress or infection into tumours, into warts, into cysts, into inflammation or congestion. And that contagion, that limiting that limits the spread, stopping that infection from becoming systemic. So what Hahnemann is saying, well, he doesn't say it in these terms because he talks in diseases rather than force. And this is where one of the changes that I've made to that. It's better, the miasms are better understood as forces or energies. Because if I repertorize up to, I've got a patient in front of me and I repertorize their case, two remedies come through as well repertorized remedies based on the presenting signs and symptoms. The first one is sulfur, the second one is Thuja. When I do this person's facial analysis, I understand that they belong to the category that is going to capture and imprison any stress or infection, stopping it from becoming systemic. So if I give that person sulfur, what I'm doing is that I'm telling them to push all of these poisons out of the system when nature has given them an immune defense system that is trying to encapsulate it. What that leaves me with is this really, look, we're back into, when you first study homeopathy, the library of books that are trying to understand why the well-chosen similimum either A, didn't work, or created an aggravation, or made things worse, or didn't complete the job, I believe it's because of this. And this brings us back into Hahnemann. The selection of the sulfur was correct because it was based on the totality of the symptoms. But the selection of the sulfur was incorrect because there was no way of understanding that this patient has a an imprisoning circular action rather than a centrifugal action. So the sulfur actually won't do as good a job, or perhaps may even aggravate, where the Thuja will do a great job, that is including the totality and the miasm, like Hahnemann said. the problem that we've always faced is that you cannot choose pathology as the indicator for selection. So as a result of that, homeopaths since chronic diseases onwards have not had a basis, any sort of way of being able to choose the remedy. And that's what HFA does.
Okay. I sent you a little message that I remember reading that Hahnemann used to very often open a case with sulfur. And perhaps the people living in his time in the region had that kind of an energy force that was pushing it to the surface at that time. Maybe they did a lot of kind of energy baths, mineral baths or something, and that's what they believed. Or could it be the region that people live, the culture, that kind of thing, that why he would have chosen sulfur so often?
Look, it's certainly possible. In fact, it's more than possible, but that is such a big topic that we need days, not 30 minutes. But
okay.
But that's a very good question, and it's a good pickup. But what I'll try and do is explain it as best I can, as far as Hahnemann believed it. Now, when we know this because of his writings. Now, Hahnemann believed that, what was it, something like 96% of people were sorry. Now, the reason that he believed this is just simply because it was the only non-sexual contagious miasm that he believed existed. In fact, it was so contagious that babies would get it going down the birth canal, or you could get it just by shaking hands with somebody. So as a result of that, the vast majority of people were going to have this soric miasm there, whereas the other miasms were, of course, they were conducted by sexual intercourse. So there was clear that in his mind that the miasm sora was always going to be the most dominant because it was the most contagious and it was the only non-sexual one. So as a result of that, what he did is that he figured that seeing though nearly everyone is soric and I have got to give, you've got to treat the underlying miasm first, he just got in the habit of giving nearly everyone sulfur. The only problem with that is if you read the Paris case notes, is that look, from a modern perspective, me looking back at Hahnemann's case notes there, I understand his thinking pattern. The big problem is the case successes that came from it are just not what I would expect. And so because I measure truth by the success or otherwise of cases, I would then, in modern day, I would make the conclusion that that is not a good way of conducting a case. You just do not get the successes that I am used to by doing it like that. And I'm judging that by his own case records.
Okay. I thought that he was just doing it sort of like a opening remedy to get a better idea about the person and to clear whatever things that person had used before. So let's turn that into another discussion at another time and go forward with what it was that you wanted to present today. Let's see. Yeah, I was trying to look at the clock. We've only got about 5 or 6 minutes. Unless you want to go further, I think we might be able to.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind. I'm happy to go further.
Okay. If I can figure out how to work the studio and it will let us continue on, we could do that. Okay.
Okay. So what would you like me to talk about now?
We can go back where I interrupted you. And you were I started to ask you and take you off on a branch with that sulfur. You were talking about he had a library of books to understand the well-chosen. Okay. You were talking about the anti-miasmatic remedies, and they were chosen based on signs and symptoms that mimic the miasm of the patient.
What I was trying to get across there was that And this was the talk about the nozodes, that the nozodes are some sort of different breed of remedy, that they do a different job to any other remedy. What I guess I'm trying to make, the point that I'm trying to make is that I agree with Hahnemann that they are not a different breed of remedy. The right remedy is the remedy that matches the totality of symptoms. The right remedy has the totality of symptoms and includes that underlying miasm that the patient has. Now, this is the basis of the whole chronic disease system that Hahnemann put into place. What he's saying is that unless you have that, the remedy suits the miasm of the patient as well as the totality of symptoms, then we're back to almost acute prescribing, and that is not the point. The point is chronic disease prescribing. Chronic disease prescribing requires additional knowledge on behalf of the practitioner, because it's not obvious. This is something you have to rationalize out. The problem with it is that no one's been able to do it. And, you know, when we were saying earlier about, look, I measure everything by the truth of the clinic, but there's another way that you can measure truth as well, I guess, and that is, well, at least the lack of truth, and that's by the confusion that it causes. Now, I remember at the very start of the conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, I said, look, one of the hard bits for homeopaths, and particularly homeopathic students, is that there are as many interpretations of the miasms as there are practitioners living on the planet. Now, what that signifies to me is that, unfortunately, Hahnemann did not leave his chronic disease theory in any sort of stable and understandable way. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the variations that range from the plausible to the specious to the just incredible, almost insane. I mean, the array of different interpretations of what a miasm is, how to get it, what it is that we're actually doing. And from an outsider's point of view, looking at the treatment of chronic disease, it's very hard for homeopaths to come across with a great deal of credibility, because there's so many ways that you can approach it. And I know with some people that they say, well, look, that fluidity, that is the charm, that is the strength of homeopathy, but I don't see it that way. Really, truth can be systemized, meaning that it can be reproduced. It's not a free-for-all. What we're trying to do with HFA, or what we found we could do, I never set out to actually do it, but when we were teaching, I give this example very often, so you've probably heard me say it before, but I remember going to a seminar one time, and there were about 100 people in the room, and the seminar presenter, as seminar presenters always do, sort of showed a case and just opened it up and said, well, what remedy are we going to choose, or what is our starting rubric? And I think there were as many answers, different answers, as there were people in the room. And that presenter laughed and said, well, see, that's the problem. You can have 100 different homeopaths in the room and 100 different answers. Now, the only thing was is that I don't think that that's right. I was the only one that wasn't laughing at that one, because I could see that what that means is that if it's that subjective, you don't have a system. And a system means that there is at least a baseline of reproducibility. What I liked about HFA as it developed, and I ended up not only using it and implementing it into my clinic, but eventually gained enough confidence in it to start teaching it, was that I could then take a case, go back to my students and say, all right, what's our starting point? Now, starting point is to do the face. Everybody would then look at these different facial features, jot it down and say, okay, we think that this person is tubercular. And because it was uniform, then what we've got is a uniform starting base. We're all going to choose at least a tubercular remedy. So we're all kind of in the same ballpark. That is the strength of this system. And this is why I can train people up, and that they can get these same reproducible results to the same degree as myself without having to have that 20, 30, 40 years of experience. That, I think, is one of its great benefits.
Okay. You know, we have about, it says 60 seconds left to the show, and it used to give me an option to continue, and it may just cut us off in a few seconds. So we
That's
will
all right.
hold off, and I want to tell everyone, we have quite a few guests here. Thank you so much for listening in. If we end the show, that's good. If not, we'll just pause for 30 seconds and see if it will let us continue. Okay? And Grant,
yeah,
I want to thank you, Grant, because it's really fascinating, and people really need to learn this basic knowledge.
Well, look, I think they do. I think it's high time. In this homeopathic world of where it's kind of a little cultish in the sense that it's a little guru-esque. Like it all depends on the prestige and the insight of the practitioner. I guess what I'm, and that's the majority, so I know I'm talking to the minority, but there is a way, there is a method that people can improve themselves and get very good results quickly without having to feel as if they have to have some hidden knowledge after 30 years' experience that only these other masters can grasp. It's not like that. Homeopathy is there for everyone. It truly is the people's medicine, but we've got to teach it in a systematic people's medicine sort of way, and only then can we begin to really, you know, try and get homeopathy on the footsteps to go, it getting back to the status that it belongs.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you so much. We do need to improve the standing of homeopathy in the community at large and in the homeopathic community itself to realize that there are methods that can be used to standardize and understand make it even easier for people to get reproducible results. It says in the my studio that we do have just about an hour left, even though Louise says she can't hear us. Perhaps she can log out and come back in again to see if she hears us. And if anybody, any other guests are there, Grant, you can hear me fine, can't you?
Yes, I can hear you.
And okay, and I see you in the chat room. So maybe Louise should sign off and come back on. And if any of the guests are listening, they can send a comment in the chat room. Since it's still recording, just have a conversation with me and we'll go as far as we want.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to do that. Ask any question that you want to. I always think that the impromptu stuff, this is why I don't want to rehearse it. We got some basic questions that you want to ask, but I always think that the impromptu is better because it just takes you down these lines of thought that, oh look, it's Freud, isn't it? You start talking about what you need the most, what's most conscious for you. So you ask away, or anyone can ask away, and I'll just answer whatever questions that they want.
That'd be great. I hope that people will do that. Maybe I should, I'm going to launch a new chat window just in case they need to get on that chat again. My question would be, you know, we've got a good baseline now to understand that the miasmic approach that you provide means that you have to take a close look at the facial features and do these measurements. And people are going to inquire probably how to do that and how to know which remedies fall within how many miasmic categories you use.
Now, I think I've got this question right, but for some reason my screen just went on to an ad. And the ad sort of talked right over you. But I'm pretty sure I've got the question. The Myers, look, when you read chronic diseases, Hahnemann talks about Fuyu being a specific remedy for psychosis and mercury being a specific remedy for syphilis and so on. What you see there is that he is still in a very Pasteurian sort of mindset, meaning that he is looking for specifics. And I guess what's interesting about that is that we always think that homeopathy is about the individualizing, that it is in fact allopathic medicine that was, or at least now, is into just broad spectrum sort of prescriptions, where the homeopaths are far more enlightened than that, and what we were doing is we don't do specifics, we individualize. But when you look at Hahnemann's earlier works, and particularly his works through, say, chronic diseases, you don't find that's the case. He is often turning around saying, this is a specific form. And when you read chronic diseases, he says that Fuyu will do the vast majority of all psychotic cases and the mercury for the syphilis and so on. So he is definitely searching for specifics rather than the more random, at his time, hit-and-miss concoctions. But Hahnemann, and I've completely lost my train of thought. Oh, no, I understand. When we're talking about the remedies, he didn't really talk about remedies being multi-miasmatic. When he talked about Fuyu, he spoke about Fuyu for psychosis. When he spoke about mercury, he spoke about mercury for psychosis. As the whole kind of layer, disease layer and infectious model took off, then it became clear that certain remedies were only doing partial jobs. So, for example, somebody might come into your clinic and they might have five or six different symptoms. One of those symptoms is removed by sulfur, which was the indicated remedy, and then you move on to the next one. Now, what homeopaths have done is that they have said, well, the removal of that one symptom obviously means that we have removed that layer that caused that symptom. What I disagree with that. I think that a constitutional remedy is something like Kent was talking about, is something that should act at a very deep, kind of multifactorial level. If somebody came back to me and I had given them a remedy and they had five or six different complaints and only one of those complaints had ameliorated, I would look for another remedy. I wouldn't think that we've peeled off layers. I wouldn't claim it as a success like homeopaths have done. I think that, in fact, look, if you're only getting one out of six or one out of seven of the symptoms, that's more a failure than a success. So with HFA, in some ways, I've modified and raised the bar on my expectations far more. But at the same time as saying that, what I am expecting is quite different to what many contemporary homeopaths are expecting. I don't treat basic character, for example. I think it's aphorism 6 talks about the change from normalcy is what homeopaths have to do, whereas what I find now is when I go to seminars now, in a lot of contemporary homeopaths are looking at the basic character of the person as if that's what we repertorize on, that's what needs to be fixed. And regardless of what physicals they have, as long as they have some sort of epiphany, then that's really our job. Whereas I'm far too Hahnemannian for that. If I've got the aphorism wrong, I've got it wrong. But I think it's 6, where he talks about that the difference, what we have to do are the changes in character, both mental and physical. That's what we deal with. A person who is generally placid, who is now suddenly irritable, can't sleep, getting joint pain, yes, I would expect that irritability to go. But I wouldn't repertorize on the placidity of the patient. So I don't think that we are, I don't use this multi-miasmatic thing. I think that that's just come about by homeopaths trying to make lemonade out of old lemons and saying that they were right when they are in fact wrong. If we just take it that the patient is either improving on all levels, if we're doing chronic disease, that they are either improving on all levels or they're not, and that becomes our baseline of success, then I don't worry about whether it's peeled off a layer or not peeled off a layer. I just worry, is my patient better or not better?
Okay. So we're going to end this show tonight on this note, and we'll pick up right where we left off, because it looks like in the chat room there's only one person left, meaning probably no one is able to hear us, even though we do hear ourselves, and it looks in my studio as if we have plenty of time. So again, I want to thank you very much, and we will talk about making lemonade out of lemons, or orangeade out of oranges, or some pumpkin pie out of pumpkins since it's Halloween. So it's very, very interesting. I'm hearing my echo. Probably you have your show page on.
No, I've always put the mute down. There's no echo from my end, although every time I go to refresh, I get an ad.
Oh, then you are, okay. So anyway, we're going to end, and hopefully more people will listen in on future shows, and we will continue to publicize this. Go to visit what we've been studying on the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, where you can contact Grant and ask him as many questions as you like and learn about his programs. Okay. So we're going
to... Yes, we're happy to talk to anybody.
Thank you so much. Okay, closing that up today.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. With homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley, we encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.